From Ecclesiastes chapter 3. To everything there is a season, a time for every purpose under heaven. A time to be born and a time to die. A time to plant and a time to pluck what is planted. A time to kill and a time to heal. A time to break down and a time to build up. A time to weep and a time to laugh. A time to mourn and a time to dance. A time to cast away stones and a time to gather stones. A time to embrace and a time to refrain from embracing. A time to gain and a time to lose. A time to keep and a time to throw away. A time to tear and a time to sow. A time to keep silence and a time to speak. A time to love and a time to hate. A time of war and a time of peace. What profit has the worker from that in which he labours? I have seen the God-given task with which the sons of men are to be occupied. He has made everything beautiful in its time. Also, he has put eternity in their hearts, except that no one can find out the work that God does from beginning to end. I know that nothing is better for them than to rejoice and to do good in their lives. And also that every man should eat and drink and enjoy the good of all his labour. It is the gift of God. I know that whatever God does, it shall be forever. Nothing can be added to it and nothing taken from it. God does it that men should fear before him. That which is has already been, and what is to be has already been. And God requires an account of what is past. Amen. The average human being lives for 70 years. Obviously, it's a little bit longer, usually, thankfully, in the West and richer countries, and a little bit less in poorer countries. But the average is 70 years. And that is 2.2 billion seconds, or thereabouts. And so your life consists of 2.2 billion brief passing moments, or breaths, as Ecclesiastes would call them. So that means the average person spends a third of their life sleeping. That's 824 million seconds. 32,000 hours eating. I didn't think it'd be that much, but that's 115 million seconds. If someone was to work from the age of 20 to 65, 40 hours a week, 2 weeks holiday a year, that's 90,000 hours of work across their life. That's 324 million seconds. So all our lives, I don't know if you've ever thought about it this way, are made up of all these moments, these brief passing moments, these breaths. And each one just passes us by before we've even taken stock of it. And this is one of the things Ecclesiastes is saying to us, to take stock of this, to think, what are we doing with our time? What are you doing with the years, the hours, the minutes, and the seconds that you have been given? As I've said, hopefully one of my hopes in studying the book is you'll see that it's got practical wisdom for making the most of our time, and that the message of the book is actually much more positive than is often portrayed. But our passage in chapter 3 tonight is all about time and the passage of time. If you look at verse 9, Solomon asks us again the key question that is at the heart of this book, the question he keeps returning to. What profit has the worker from that in which he labours? Remember, we've seen this question before. What does Solomon mean? He means, what will you have as profit when you come to the end of your life? What will you have to show for what you've done with your time? What have you worked for? And the fundamental question is how do you use your brief breath of a life wisely so that you have something that truly matters at the end? And so in verses 1 to 8, we have this well-known meditation. We could say also it is perhaps the form of a poem. And it's about the passage of time through our brief lives, the seasons, the times that are all part of life. And there's a rhythm to the poem itself that helps us to grasp the sense of it. There's a back and forth. There's ups and downs, like breathing in and breathing out, that reflect what life is really like. And the point of all the things listed is not that some of these things are good and some of them are bad. The point is that as time flows along, we will experience all these different times and seasons. How changeable life is. One moment varies so much from the next. One moment you embrace your spouse at the altar on your wedding day. The next, you may stand at their grave weeping. One moment you're building a house. The next moment you may have to tear it down. One moment you're walking in the sunshine. The next you're under a cloud. And that is what life, full of toil on this earth, is like. Always changing. Nothing lasts. And the key point that's being made to us is, well, the wisdom we need is to know how to act appropriately in each moment. We need to have the wisdom to know what time and season it is, how to respond the right way. There are times when it is right to laugh, and times when it is right to mourn, times when it is right to build and right to destroy, even a time when it's right to fight and war, and a time when there should be peace. And the true wisdom that Solomon's trying to teach us in part is using our time the right way, having the wisdom to recognize the right godly response through all these different seasons that we pass through in our breath of a life. And again, it's a bit like Solomon's been pummeling us like a boxer in the ring, and we're on the ropes after these first few chapters of his hit us with the realities of death, and so much of what we do comes to nothing. But he's not letting us up yet. He's still going to keep us in the corner and not let us off the hook. Again, he's telling us life is like the seasons of the year. Winter, spring, summer, autumn, that they roll on through. And there's so much that is not in our control. The world doesn't stop spinning. And so often we're just going to be like a leaf that's floating along on the current of a stream, carried along and going through all these different things. Now, I'm sure you know this poem is so beautifully written that even non-Christians value it and have been inspired by it. There's some famous pop songs. Apparently, it's quite popular in even atheist funerals as a text to read. But really, one of the main things that I want to try and share with you tonight is that if we just stop with verses 1 to 8 and this meditation, we will miss entirely the point Solomon is making. We must go on to the next section, to verses 9 to 15, because they are Solomon's response to this passage of time. And he gives us the answer that we need, the hope, the truth that we need to make sense of the briefness of life. And if you look at verses 9 to 15, and this is why I think this text is so evangelistic to pagans, he's saying, you must turn to God. Look at what he says, to God who is eternal. to God, who is in control of all our times and seasons, who indeed makes everything beautiful in its time, a God who gives good gifts to enjoy along the way, who has set us our work. And he's telling us the only way to live in this ever-changing time that we're in is to know there is an eternal God above, beyond all these things. And knowing him is the only way to make sense of this breath of a life. I mean, the glory of what Solomon says about God. Again, put it in context. How people thought about gods outside of Israel as basically just like more like superpowered human beings and part of creation like us. The God of the Bible was something entirely different. Above all things, he has made everything beautiful in its time. All these different moments and parts of our lives, he makes beautiful at the right time in the right way. It's saying God has ordained all these different parts of life. In his hands, each one has a good purpose. Whether that's we're rising or falling, it's part of a beautiful plan that God is working out. And that each bit of our lives is part of this beautiful ordering that God is arranging. So think about what Solomon's saying. He's saying God is sovereign, is absolutely in control and working out all things to a beautiful grand design. And it's this word beautiful that I think is so striking. It's not that God's ordering of our moments is some merely, you know, utilitarian plan, some functional plan just to get to some goal. Beautiful means it's more like he's an artist and he's creating something glorious. As Lord of time and space over every human life and every human moment, nothing happens apart from his sovereign will, and it will all be beautiful in his plan. It should make us think of those words of the Lord when he says, you know, not a hair falls from your head, not a sparrow falls to the ground apart from the Father's will. And verse 11, he's put eternity in men's hearts. So he's created us as unique amongst all his creatures. We're spiritual beings made in his image. We have within us, every single human being, an inner sense of the divine, which includes a conscience and a heart that longs for something beyond this world. We have a soul that knows and seeks for God. There's an inner witness within that man may suppress, but he cannot escape. And then, as a comparison, his work is so far above us, it's nothing like our works. Think about all we've heard in the past few chapters, but our works all crumble, they come to nothing. But verse 14, whatever God does, it shall be forever. Solomon's telling us where to put our hope. Now we've seen our works and our time come to an end. But look at what God does, he says. If God does something, it's so powerful. You can rely on his work, on this eternal, all-powerful God. And it's essential, again, he's teaching us humility before such a God. Because, verse 11, no one can find out that work that God does from beginning to end. So again, he's talking about God's beautiful grand design, weaving together all our moments. But he says, but we will never fully understand or take it in what he's ordained. As creatures of time, it's too high for us. It's too great for us. So verse 14, we should fear him, worship him, it means, honor him, trust him. It's a bit like that old tale I'm sure you'll have heard about a man who visited an old-fashioned Turkish carpet maker. And he goes into the shop and he sees a huge carpet being made, and it's stretched out on a stand. And on one side, he sees the carpet maker weaving together, piling and cutting all the different threads. And it's a total mess, a jumble of different colours, different lengths. But then when he goes round to the other side, he sees it's emerging there as a beautiful picture, patterns and shapes and colours. And Solomon's saying something like that to us. We moment by moment, we just see sometimes the mess, the jumble, the uncertainty. But he's saying, On the other side is eternal God who's creating something beautiful. And that is where we must put our hope, in his beautiful grand design. And so Solomon again tells us how to live. This is his practical wisdom. What to do then? Well, verse 12, we are to do good. And again, you've got to take that in the full old biblical sense of pleasing God, keeping his commandments, doing good, and enjoy the good gifts that God gives, that he gives to comfort us and bless us along the way. Enjoy the work that he gives you to do, because you can trust everything is in his hands. Trust in his sovereign rule. And then as a concluding thought to this section in verse 15, Solomon begins to prepare us for what comes next and what the next section will focus on. That God is also a judge and will require an account of what is past. And that's the other vital thing we need to know about what to do with our time, how to live in time, that we will ultimately give an answer to God. We are accountable to him. And that is the main theme of the next section, particularly when Solomon speaks about injustice. But for this evening, brothers and sisters, when we think about all the different times we pass through, where we find hope, where we find meaning, what profit is there from our labours? It comes from knowing God, eternal, almighty, and working, living joyfully, because we know he is working out this beautiful design as the eternal, all-powerful God. So I hope you see there's much in here actually to comfort us. He makes all things beautiful in their time.